Before we get started with today's show, let me tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy. It kicked off season 9 on March 8th with NASA astronaut Nicole Mann while she is actually on the International Space Station. Check out what this astronaut and former Naval Academy soccer player has to say about life in space and how being an athlete helped her spacewalk. That's Laughter Permitted every Wednesday. Listen where you're listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get this podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Not much, man. It feels like Foxworth Friday, but it don't feel as good as last Foxworth Friday where the people got a double dose.
Yes.
They had Game Theory and The Right Time.
Yo, but, hold on.
We'll try to pack it all into this one.
Thank you for mentioning that. And we're going to get to talking about a little Aaron Rodgers, a little John Morant, all that messy stuff. We get there in a minute. But let me tell you guys what Dominique Foxworth did on Game Theory. That Dominique Foxworth doesn't even realize he did on Game Theory because I keep forgetting to tell Dominique Foxworth that this thing happened. Okay, so sitting on the stage doing the interview with Dominique, and you know, it's me and Dominique. Dominique was on fire, boy. Dominique knew he was on TV, man. He was projected. He had that fire.
Trying to show up for your man.
Like I said, he had that fire and Kodo. It's always wild, like when I have the homies on, but they understand the moment. Like when I have Roy Wood on, all of a sudden it's like, all right, I've been talking to Roy. Oh, professional TV comedian Roy is on. You are selling my show right now. And I love you for that, right? Dominique came in there selling it. We were talking about Lamar Jackson and we talk about the labor issues and all of that stuff. And Dominique hit him with, you got to understand, this is a monopsony. And bruh, they told me after the show, because I remember when I was sitting there, I was like, oh, wow, he hit him with the monopsony. I don't know how many people know what this means, but I feel you. Dominique, they said, you shut the control room down. They was in there trying to figure out whether or not they needed to go back, whether or not it was a word. And it was like, but it was a couple people like the 5%, right? The enlightened 5%, yeah. God's chosen few that were in there. And they were like, nah, it's good. It's a word. And they said it was people in there pulling out the phones, scrambling, man, to get to the bottom of what a monopoly was.
They thought I just
was.
Mispronounced monopoly.
They just weren't sure. Man. You know what I'm saying? And for the people who don't know, the easiest way to explain it, a monopoly is when there are many buyers and one seller. A monopsony is when there are many sellers and one buyer. And in this example, the NFL would be the buyer and all y'all with these football dreams would be the sellers. They weren't ready, dog. Dominique, they put in the intro about how you had an MBA for Harvard or whatever. I don't know if they thought you went to class or not, but they figured out that you did.
Yeah, it was fun, man. I mean, you got to put a little something in there for everybody. I wanted the nerds to feel happy, and I wanted the jokes to hit everybody else, and also wanted to make everybody feel a little bad. That's I don't know. I was sitting in the green room thinking about what we was going to talk about, and I was like, I'm going to talk about how these people get on my nerves, and actually, the people who get on my nerves is y'all. So I don't know if that played well, but I hope
No. That's what this show here for. I was glad that you came for what I believed up to that point was our best episode.
Yeah, that episode was great. I was watching that in the control room before I went out there. I was like, oh, this is the one.
Yo, but what's funny about it is like the vestige of it that I'm dealing with right now.
Yeah.
The angry bots.
Yeah.
And it's all bots. Like, that's the thing. So if you didn't see it, we talked about this on the show with David Dennis, the Kendrick Perkins, J.J. Redick situation. And my whole point was, and my point still remains, I just don't understand why you would ever be so sure that white people are not operating with some measure of bias. That's all. Yeah. It don't mean that you all are. It doesn't mean that you all got to prove yourself. But you haven't proven that you're not. And I think that that is fair and 100% a thing to say. Boy, they trying so hard to come get you, boy. Like, people so mad. I talked about it before. Them people trying to get Brett Favre to sue me. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see that?
Yeah. I saw you tweet about it. It's wild.
Yeah, they just try. I don't know why it is that everybody feel like they need to try to come at your boy at this moment. When we just over here loving life and living crazy. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's hard to have a show that sustains for a while. I don't know what the future is. And I'm sure you don't yet either. But I know that you made a show that was true, or you're making a show, at least that's true to which, like that last episode, that's the type of shit that don't get on TV and that needs to be talked about from the sports stuff. So like, maybe there's an audience out there, maybe there isn't, but the fact of the matter is you made some shit that making people mad, and that is really good and smart, and showing the other side of sports, the business side, that and like the relationships and the challenges, like all the stuff that we kind of comb through to make sure that y'all see the scores. Like, that's the stuff that I care about, I find interesting. Yeah. And I was happy to be a part of that episode and be able to add to that that stew.
I appreciate that, because I tell you, every time we do something to feel like it could be on another show, that's when we go try to do something else. Because we're not going to be able to do the other show better than the other people do the other show, because that's the show that they do. You know? But that being said, you guys tune in this week, Game Theory, Fridays at 11 o'clock Eastern on HBO, HBO Max. Our guest is Taylor Rooks. And we got a essay on college sports that I think you guys will find very interesting. Also, so you guys know, I think this weekend I will have an article in a publication called the New York Times.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You writing it, or it's about you?
I'm writing it. Okay. I write it. Next week I'm going to be on the Morning Joe over there, on MSNBC, which is going to be fun. I always like going around new white people. You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody booked me for that show, and so they think they like me or whatever it is, but it always be so amazing. That first time I go on and start talking, and they're like, how did that happen? Really? Wow. And some of y'all out here looking at me like, oh, you think you all that like that? No, I'm just telling you, go back and watch the first time I get on with anybody. They be sitting there like, oh, I'm almost reluctant to say, because you never know how these things turn out, but I think I'll be okay. But on Monday, I will not give particulars, but I am dropping in to do a cameo appearance on one of my favorite television shows. Pre-edit, I have a couple of lines.
I saw you. I was, what'd I see you in? Oh, the Best Man.
Oh,
I saw
yeah.
you in the Best Man, because, so, I mean, my wife is a black woman of a certain age, which means we don't miss no Best Man. And so I'm watching it, like, it's on in the kitchen while we doing stuff, and I walk past like, that Bomani on Best Man. And I don't know how active you are on the socials, but my guess is,
yeah, it was a tie. When it dropped.
Yeah. I feel like that's perfect. Perfect advertising for a black man of your age.
Yes,
is being on there like, hey.
Yes, I wrote my own dialogue, by the way. Like, I wrote my line. That was my.
Yeah,
own,
you told me that. That was good. That would have been better than anything that they would have written for you.
Yeah, the Best Man. I saw the Best Man in the theater with the first two women I ever fell in love with. Not at the same time, but.
So I'm to say, you was ahead of the game.
Yeah, it was a very interesting overlap of circumstances as things happened, but you know. That's changed, but sometimes the movie's still in the theater.
Yeah, that's a young man. Yeah, that's fine. That's a young man's fantasy thing. Like, I feel like rappers talk about it, and guys think like, man, my girl got a girlfriend, or I got two wives. That sounds terrible.
No, it sounds like the worst. That's the I got two jobs. I mean,
like, why you want to work that hard? Just get one good one. One good job, one good woman, and you're good to go.
Yeah, nah, we not. Nah, wouldn't want that. But yeah, check out Game Theory, 11 o'clock, Fridays, HBO, HBO Max.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, as of this recording, And I'm like a little reluctant to do this because it's possible, as you guys know, we record Fox or Friday on Thursday, unless you think we record it at 6 o'clock in the morning and you get it at 6:15. We have to do the day before. As of yet, the full Jalen Rose, Ja Morant interview has not been released. However, we have gotten some snippets of it. First of all, Jalen in that clip came in hot. Whose gun was it? I gotta be honest with you. I had not given that a moment of consideration. I hope he told Ja, like, hey, they say I gotta ask you something off the top. Just roll with it.
Jalen was doing his real journalism thing.
Yes.
Like, they picked Jalen out. I was like, hey, we got Jalen. He gonna take care of us. Like, nah. Jalen tried to get to the bottom of this shit.
See, Jalen was the right person to talk to if you saw what he said on Countdown that day, yeah, right? Because, like, there's room to be critical of Ja Morant, but also offer a certain measure of sympathy. Now, to me, none of this makes sense, him coming back to play right now. If this is bad enough that you needed to go to some sort of counseling facility and do all this introspection, and you was out here doing all the stuff that they said you did, taking a week and learning some breathing exercises, at least from where I sit, does not seem like it's fixing what needs to be fixed. And if something needed to be fixed and it's about stress management, guys, it's about to be the playoffs. I don't feel like things are going to get easier for you. But I sat there and I watched it, and it just seemed like they just scheduled an interview as soon as they felt like he had memorized that stuff they had put on that card for him to say about, you know, that's not the real job. Like, hey, man, if you ain't ready to not talk about yourself in the third person in this interview, I think probably right now is not the time for you to do this. But I felt like they just rushed this dude out here because everybody needs to, the Grizzlies need to get this back on track. I guess the NBA in some measure needs to get this back on track. But I did not watch that interview and come away from it, A, with any actual, at least from what we've seen so far, any actual insight into him and to what was going on or whatever it is. It just seemed like they just trying to check the boxes on the PR crisis checklist so that they can get back to business as usual. And if he really has the problems or the issues that they seem to imply that he had, you're not fixing that in a week and a half.
It seemed like they were, like you said, checking the boxes. Yeah, but they are not looking at the future boxes. They checking the most immediate boxes and not realizing that the decisions that you make now and the things that you say now and things that you do now are going to have impacts into the future. I think that the most immediate concern for the Grizzlies is making the playoffs or whatever, making a run. Most immediate concern for Ja is also that, but getting his money too, because like his money is tied up in him making all NBA, which probably ain't gonna happen if he don't play the rest of the season. Those incentives and motivations are there. So obviously we can't climb into his head, but there's no way to argue around the fact that this makes it look like they weren't taking this seriously and they just wanted to have something to say, like, we doing this. Because your point is accurate. If you expect us to extend the sympathy to him of or accept the explanation, like, no, it's bigger than just somebody being stupid. It's he got a problem and he need to work on it. Then I'm gonna need you to do at least go away for a little longer. And I know maybe it's just a facade, but if you guys are going to tell us that, then I need the whole thing. I need the whole act. I need you to know more of the words when you come and do your interview. Like, maybe you just do some studying, but I need to feel like you done really, like, you went to school and became a counselor. Like, if that's the act you're going to do. And if it's real, then to your point, it feels hard to imagine that the ridiculous thing was actually only one, or yeah, it's really, to me, it's like one ridiculous thing. And I made this point before on my own podcast about how the two other major things, the two other major things, the one at the mall and the one with the 17-year-old kid. I've been around a lot of football players, and I would include myself in this situation. I could imagine something that I was a part of when I was young escalating to the point that something like that happened. If my mom would never do this, but say a girl I was dating or one of my homeboys called me and was like, they tripping at the mall. I'm going to the mall. And what happens from there with a bunch of dudes, like, it could escalate that point. If I'm at a party at my house or playing ball and it's a 17-year-old kid who, like, I don't know the details of the situation, but like, forget that a 17-year-old, somebody is being aggressive around me. I could see it from me or my friends escalating to the point where somebody getting roughed up. Like, those are things that I could understand. The one where the lasers on the car or on the Pacers, nah. But Ja wasn't the one doing that. The one, okay, I mean, we don't know, right? The one where after all this shit happened, you went on Instagram Live and dangled a baby gun. That is when I stopped being critical of Ja and was like, something wrong, man. This boy off, right? And that's when I stopped being critical, and that's when I was open to accept, like, yeah, let's not be hard on him. Right. Let him go get this work done, because that is, like, I could understand being angry enough to do those other things. I could understand, but what I cannot understand is being arrogant or foolish or high or drunk, like, allegedly, I don't know what was going on, but something has to explain, or being off, just generally off enough to be like, all right, I'm in turmoil for trying to be too tough.
Right.
I'm going to go on Instagram Live from a strip club and show a gun. And that's when I was like, all right, I'm willing to accept whatever you want. And so when they said he going to counseling and he got to go away for a little while, I was like, yeah, that probably, yeah, he got to get this addressed. Well, but you back in 2 days?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I think if we had known this detail earlier, that trip to the strip club that we saw was the second time he'd been there in like 36 hours or something like that. That was the, oh, God. And I don't know who working at that strip club that didn't need the money no more and put that video out there. I ain't never going to Shotgun Willie's. Y'all wilding. Mm-hmm. Like I thought the game had rules. You know what I'm saying? Like this, this is something else. Like, I did see a clip from the interview where he mentioned something about, I can't remember if I read this or I watched it, but he was like, yeah, I'm going to protect my family. You know, these, you know, all them things is lies. I can't really talk about it, but a lot of that is lies. Everybody lying about y'all having guns and doing this stuff, right? All these independent actors, every single one of them's lying. All right. Like, I'm sure they lying about some of it, but just telling me it's lies. I need to know which part of it is lies. But a lot, I would like to know what Ja Morant looked like in one moment on this, right? And I'm going to give you an example of something else before I bring this back. So I was with somebody the other day, and middle-aged dude got a son, like late teens, early 20s, somewhere in there. And somebody asked him, is he in school? And he responded, nah, I got his ass a job up here with me. And the fact that he used the phrase, I got his ass a job with me, told me everything I needed to know about what the last couple years have been like for mm-hmm. him as father with that son. I knew everything just in him saying, yeah, I got his ass a job up here. His ass part was completely out of nowhere. Yeah, I got his ass a job up here. All he had to tell us was, nah, he's working with me. Nope. Like, okay, we're all.
You know how people say pictures say 1,000 words? Yes. Like the tone in those couple of words.
Yes.
Like, man, I done concocted a whole 16 years of this man's life. But anyway.
Yes, we got that. So with that in mind, when Ja Morant picked up that phone call or looked at his phone and saw mama on the screen, and he picked it up and she said, hey, they up here at Finish Line tripping. Was Ja Morant like, oh yeah? Not for long. Got on his horse, went down to the Finish Line, made it happen. Or when she called up, Ja, they at Finish Line tripping. He was like, all right, yeah, I'm on. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I'll beat her.
Right.
I'll beat her. Yeah, right. You got it. That'll tell us everything we need to know right there about the dynamic of this situation. Just how eager was he to make the finish line run? Now, if we are to assume that the teenage fighting story has some legitimacy to it, I imagine that when it was time to go to the finish line, he was on that horse. He was ready. He'd wake up every day waiting for something like this, because you don't call every kinfolk a cousin or whatever in them situations. You call the one that you know is ready for action. Now, I feel like, Ja, if you're going to have your boys around all the time, then your mama need to look at them like family. You know what I'm saying? Which is to say, one of them knuckleheads need to be the one whose job it is to come up here And that one that can't come to the arena no more?
That guy.
I don't know what happened at the finish line, but we extend Ja a lot of leeway because of his age. I don't know how old his mom is, but I feel like being critical of anybody in that situation, again, I don't know what happened. There are some things that could have happened that, all right, somebody got to come up here and take care of this. But honestly, most of the things that take place in the mall is like not at that level. And I grew up, I think I mentioned this with you before, like my mom was the one who even the slightest thing that felt like a little bit of disrespect. Like I remember her going off on somebody because they put her change on the counter. It was like she felt like that was disrespect. And if you in line to buy something at the mall, she won't approach the counter until you acknowledge her and like invite her to the counter. So like just and like look at her, look up and look at my eyes, like these type of things. These are minor things where I'm an 8, 9, 10 year old kid, like kind of embarrassed. Like, come on, mom. Like, nah, no, they not like they don't mean it. This is just like whatever. But I do know one thing. She would never, ever, ever, ever call me or my brother or anybody else to handle that. She going to tell these people off. If it happens to escalate to somewhere where it's physical, not that it ever has, she going to handle it. But so the idea that you are going to call and put your son in that situation, and I'm not even putting in the fact that your son's Ja Morant, your son at any point, like, why would you do that to your son? And again, I don't know what happened. If somebody pushed you or something, or somebody like swung on you, that's a different story.
Yep.
But my guess is it's like regular run of the mill. These people work at finish line, so they're not always in a good mood, yeah. And they probably didn't treat her with the respect that she thought she deserved.
And the thing is, Ja gotta go.
Yeah, you right, can't
right, right, like I forget who I was talking to about this, but they made a great point. It might have been Vinny who made a great point, which was as much as Jalen made that point that once you get the money, you now the head of the family. Mm-hmm. At the same time, when your mama say come, you still gotta come. Like that part is never going to change. Like your mama can't be like, "Hey, they tripping at finish line." You'd be like, "So what you about to do?" Yeah. That's not working.
I imagine she was hyped up, and that's my point about how I could understand this happening to me. If my mom called me,
yeah, you there?
It's like, oh my god, what are these, I'm gone. Like, drop a pin, mama.
Yep, that's it. Like there's no other option, right? Again, the only question is whether it's all right. I'm coming or. All right, I heard you. You good? Don't say no. Don't say no more. Don't say no more. Because all of this is a corollary to, you know what? I'ma call my man. Oh, damn. Serious.
Hey, so I could. I'm sure the statute of limitations is up on this. I can tell you this story from when I was in Denver. We was going over some girls' houses or women's houses. It was a few, like, apartment. Me and a couple teammates and one of the coach's sons, actually, was with us. We went over there. We, like, talked to the girls. And not all the girls are single. Not all the girls are interested in us. But we, like, whatever. It's just out, hanging out, about to go out. And so one of them is, like, tired of us, wants us to leave. Most of them don't want us to leave. One of them wants us to leave. So a couple of the guys are mad, like, chill. Because, like, you're making progress with some of them. And I at this point in my life, I didn't start drinking till I was 35. So at this point in my life, I'm sober as shit. Like, okay, this escalating. They yelling for us to leave, and y'all don't want to leave. We a bunch of black football players in Denver, Colorado. It's time to go. So of course I can't corral everybody quickly enough, but she getting mad, and then she like, all right, I'm calling my man, blah, blah. And ain't nobody really scared because it's like, And so eventually we get everybody out to the car and to the cars, and we're pulling out of the apartment parking garage. A pickup truck pulls in and blocks us into the garage. Couple dudes hop out and start talking shit, blah, blah, blah. And so pickup trucks have the rack on the back, and I can see through the glass, like through their windshield, the rack on the back. I'm like, nah. Cause it's two of them and they regular sized dudes. It's like four of us and we football players. And so like, ain't nobody scared. But I see the rack in the back and I'm like, nah, we ain't doing this. And so I step to the front like, oh, my bad. I apologize. I got everything under control. And everybody else is like, man, who they think they are? They going to do what I said? I'm like, look, man, I'm sorry. Let's get out of it. And we get out of that situation just fine. But that's what I'm thinking about when I say I see how this stuff could escalate, because I could have been the one that was in there that's like, because if he'd have started shooting or if they'd have started fighting, I'm fighting too.
Let me tell you.
I don't have a choice.
See, y'all was thinking different about that situation that you outlined than I was, right? Because as soon as she was like, I'm going to call my man, I'd have been like, we are all out of here. And the reason why is, as big as y'all are, she only is calling her man. She don't think her man know kung fu. That he got to have an equalizer of some form of fashion if he going to come over here by himself and clear out the spot. And it sounds to me as though that room, it was the Raiders away jerseys, not the Raiders home jerseys.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm out. I'm
absolutely
out. I'm out.
Absolutely.
I'm out. Like there was enough context clues there.
That was enough for me. Yeah, it was not the home jerseys. It was the away, all the way away, Colorado away.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
You notice I didn't say Denver.
Nah,
we was in Colorado.
And you said the rack in the back. Everything right there.
Rack in the back.
Everything added up. Nah, there's nothing quite like when a woman in a circumstance is saying something that is gonna turn it into a thing for you, right? Lastly, I was thinking about this. I forgot you played a year with Tlaib, but don't forget about that time that Tlaib's sister allegedly called him, and him and his mama allegedly had to shoot out with the dude. That's maybe the wildest NFL story. That, of all the Tlaib stories, Tlaib and his mama having a shootout where Tlaib had to start shooting because his mama gun jammed is like the wildest thing. But I was telling this story yesterday. I had gone out one night like 20 years ago. I'm in LA. I'm with one of my homies. And we catch up with this woman. And she's like, all right, y'all trying to kick it? We like, cool. And it's one of the wild nights where we rode with some people, but we wound up with her. And she's like, I'll take you home. But didn't remember she said that. So the morning got really awkward where I'm like, yo, hour 15-minute drive. But you said, like, otherwise, why you think we still here, right? So anyway, we roll with her. And again, this L.A. And I wound up telling this story because we were having a discussion in the office about whether or not baby boy was good or not. And I was like, this is a very baby boy situation that I wound up in. So it's me and my man. We walk up in this, I guess, hood spot, you know, LA weird like that, right? Like once it gets dark, you can't really tell. I mean, daytime, it's even harder, but it was fairly hoodish. And we get in there and there's a bunch of people in the house and we both come in with this girl. And these dudes are there. And we're like, oh, yeah, what's going on with y'all? We dap them up or whatever. She got a couple homegirls that are there. And she take the two homegirls and they go in some other room. And we just making conversation, you know, with the dudes that's there. We don't know nothing about what's happening here. And then out of nowhere, I hear from the other room, girl, they better looking than these dudes y'all here with. And I'm like, could you please lower your voice? I am now in a situation where I feel as though I might have to, like, could you please lower your voice?
I mean, I'm sure I don't want to have to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure these gentlemen are very secure in who they are, but I don't think that they appreciate hearing what you just said. Like, why did you? And it's like, oh man, is this going to turn into a thing for somebody I don't even know? Like, she was just trying to get her a wingman. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's just trying to get somebody to roll out and kick it with us.
That's rough, man. I did my 20s, man. That was, I'm thinking of a bunch of other stories, but we can't turn this into just story time. I'm happy I'm here.
Yes.
That's all. I'm happy I'm here and I'm with who I'm with. Because the coach's son ended up having a baby with one of the girls there that night. Oh. So they connected forever.
Oh, see, like that's why this podcast needs to exist. You know what I'm saying? Because there's no other place in sports that we can safely make these perfectly logical transitions. Like, we wind up in some far-flung places, but it really always makes sense. It's never just like, oh, throw this thing out there. Nah, there's other elements that come in here, and you got to remember that. Poor John Barrett. His mama called... Damn.
Yeah, this is where we started. Like, this is more context than anybody other than John Morant is going to give to this story.
Yes, right there. Like, that is a very important detail. When your mama say roll up, you really kind of got to roll up. And you can tell, again, everything about the situation by the energy that you got when you get out the car. And that's why I figured John was excited. Well, if you get out and be like, hey, mama, hey, everybody, how you doing? I'm John, what's up? No, I just wanted to, so what's going on? Or you put them aside and be like, hey, man, I just need y'all. It's my mom. I just need y'all to let me know what's happening here. That's all.
Exactly.
Okay. No. It's cool. It's cool. All right. You got it? All right. Cool. Thank you. Come here. Yeah, I talked to him. Let's go.
Yep. So it's like when you see a basketball fight. I think the Bucks got in one a couple nights ago. And where your back is facing tells you a lot. And I imagine that how I would have showed up at that place is I'm turning my back to the finish line employees and the security guard, and I'm looking chest to mama, and we backing up like, all right, look, I'm going to take you over here. You take that, and I'm going to separate, create some distance. So I'm going in with a strategy.
Yes.
First, I'm creating some distance. I'm going to get mama to the car. Then I'm going to go back and have a calm conversation with the finish line employees and the security guards, and then come back to mama like, man, I got them motherfuckers. It's great.
My next question is, how far he live from the mall? Because I feel like if it take you 15 minutes to get to the mall from the house, it's too late. It's already too late. If it's really something that I need to show up for, it's already too late. By the way, speaking of the Grizzlies, did you see what Desmond Bane did to Kevin Love yesterday?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I think it was yesterday. He hit him in the, what they call him, the solar plexus. Unnecessarily coming around on a screen, hit him with the, and some Memphis people got mad because the clip of me and David Dennis talking about how we all loved the Grizzlies last year, and now we're really kind of sick of them, went around. And of course, a lot of Memphis got angry, and I'm going to be real with y'all. Angry Memphis is not what I want. I already had DJ Vlad misrepresent what I was saying about Young Dolph. And then now this, I would like to come to your city for a playoff game because it looks like it's fun. However, I mean, cats just be rolling up with guns at finish line. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, allegedly. So I don't know if, you know, like, let's get some peace on this or whatever. But I am telling you guys right now, you got Dylan Brooks and Desmond Bane is out here as a meat slugger. This is inappropriate behavior that you guys are engaging in. Their head coach needs to get a little less Taylor and a little more Jenkins and get in there and lay down the law. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no more ironic name than Taylor Jenkins. Like, that's a version of how Jacques Vaughn is from California, but Tony Parker is from France. Taylor Jenkins, you be trying to figure out which is which.
Yeah, I thought that you were talking about Dylan Brooks, because that's a Dylan Brooks style behavior. Yes. When you're talking about Desmond Bane, I was like, oh, he must have meant Dylan Brooks.
No, that's what I'm saying. I didn't think that was part of his character. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I had to get real. Like, the New York dudes love to say that. Yo, I thought your character was stronger than that. You know what I'm saying? I thought he had a different character.
You picking it up. You fit right in. Like, I feel like, yeah, need a backpack. A puffer, you good to go.
Yo, I'm so, like, living the privileged life that, you know, your career kind of dictates your directions. I don't even know what they be wearing like that no more. Like, I live in Harlem and all of that. I don't even know what the streets is wearing.
Yeah, you don't be standing outside. Don't be walking too far from the door to the car, and that's about it.
Well, I'll also tell you this about New York. They definitely engineered a widespread take your ass inside campaign. Like, when I used to come here 20-something years ago and stuff like that, like, the we just be outside, they don't be outside the projects at all. Like, they told them, y'all got to stay inside. But cats don't really just be outside in New York like it used to be. Like, when I got to college, them New York dudes would just always be outside, and we Southerners couldn't understand why.
That's a good point. So, like, I lived in New York for a year, and I go to New York once a week during the football season. And, like, I know where all the projects were in Harlem because I lived by Columbia, and I worked in Harlem. So I walked through all the projects on the way over. And no matter what time, because sometimes you work late at night, no matter what time, the projects was calm. And the same thing. And, like, when I get to down by the seaport, like, I'll go out, get something to eat, grab a slice of pizza late at night. It's 10, 11 o'clock or something like that. Projects be calm. I never even considered it. It's like, they
ain't out there. Yeah.
They must just be coming by, picking people up for long enough where they was like, all right, we better all stand inside. I tell you, it ain't even that cold.
I tell you this, though. I still think rules is rules. And I say that because one day I was leaving work, and a good friend of mine, his daughter was in a school play. And that friend, like me, you know, we got very similar sensibilities, and we see the value of putting your kids in public school. you know, mm-hmm. like you gotta know more about the world than just people that's like you, right? Public school gives you that opportunity. And so I caught the train from work to go to this school. Now, you people with some familiarity of New York, I will give you the details that may help you. The train stop for work is the Fulton Street station. And at the Fulton Street station, you can basically get all the trains that go uptown in the city. Yep. And so I caught catching from work. I have to go get on the 6. And I have to get on the 6 because my destination is at 103 or somewhere and Lexington. I think it was one block over. Either way it goes. I remember I put it into Google Maps. And I was like, this is really weird. It's telling me it's on 103rd Street, but there's this curve in the walk. Like, I don't understand how, like, 103rd Street curves around. It curves around because what the Google Maps was telling me to do was to cut it through the Jecks. And I had a real dilemma because, like, walking around the projects is adding a lot of blocks to your walk. However, yeah. I don't really have an answer for what I'm doing here. Just cutting across the yard, which is basically what you do when you just cut it through the projects. But it was daylight, and I just had to do it. And I did it, and wasn't nobody outside. Like, that's the thing, man. Yeah. Ain't nobody outside.
I mean, I had to go to the Bronx a couple times, and it was a little bit more the old New York, but most of New York ain't really like that. And the public school point that you made is a good one, but it's not always accurate. Because my local public school, where we at right now.
Oh, no.
They won't get no slice of life.
Oh, no. I get you, but.
New York.
But yeah, in this case, like I said,
yeah.
She was in public school on 100-something Lex. It was a different slice of life, absolutely, in this particular case. Now, you're right about that. See, I think my public school experience is colored by the fact that I went to a school where everybody in that town went.
Yeah.
So then you do get that slice. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think most of the times it's true, but I mean, this could veer off into a whole nother conversation about capitalism and race and society and all that stuff, because it would be nice if schools had all slices of life, but some people would rather fill up the pool than swim in.
Yeah, but that's like Texas, it's that different public school game. It's the, we are all going to move into this place and form our own school district that you can't move into. So now, we ain't got...
essentially a private school.
We ain't got no apartments over here. Like Drew Brees, that Austin Westlake High School that he went to, that's one of those. Highland Park in Dallas, I think, is one of those. That's where Matthew Stafford and Clayton Kershaw are from. It's one of those where they're like, yo, we gonna go get our own thing cracking. They got him in Houston. Like, that's a whole thing, but they're like, nah. Government should do this. But for us. Dude, goddamn state just came in taking over Houston Public Schools.
Damn. I didn't know that.
That just happened, I think, yesterday. I was like, whoa.
As I get older, I realize, like, so many, and I mean, you've been on this for a while, like the loss of faith in institutions, and frankly, some just institutions aren't what they seem. But there's so many things that you just assume. And I think when we talk about sports, people do this often with the NFL, is like, it's the NFL, and the NFL doesn't have opinions or personality or ideas. But you fail to understand that all institutions are made up of by people, and the decisions that the institutions are making, or at least the organizations that make up an institution are making, are being made by people, and people with disproportionate amounts of information and access and power and control. And so then at the end of the day, when life is unfair for certain groups of people, they're like, nah, that's just how it's set up. You set it up. You set it up. And like, when I'm a kid, I'm young, I'm not thinking that. It's just like, oh no, this is the state. This is the city. This is the school district. No, you set it up. You funded it. You made the decisions. You elected the people. You voted for the people. You funded the campaigns to make all the decisions that advantage you. And then when certain people can't access certain things and can't get to certain places, you look at them, and then we all look at them. And the craziest thing about it is we look at each other like, man, you just ain't working hard enough. Not just poor people, like anybody who ain't having the success that they want in their life. We look at them and say, man, you just got to work harder And who does that benefit? The same people who set this up from the top. Because we all looking at each other like, just grind. You got to grind. Everybody got to grind if you want to make something of yourself. Shut the fuck up. I'm sorry.
You good. You good. I want to write fast because I talked about this a lot with David Dennis. And I'm asking you this because we got like 5 minutes left. How good is Aaron Rodgers still?
Better than any other option the Jets have. And that's the what it comes
well,
to.
Well, I get it so, for that on that level. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's probably top half of the league. Absolutely. Maybe top third of the league. Probably. I think we have to understand also like how interdependent the game is and specifically that opinion or that position is. Cause I thought Tom Brady was done when he went to Tampa, before he went to Tampa. But then he got down there with a perfect offensive line, outstanding receivers, and maybe the best defense in football. And all of a sudden, he's as good as anybody in football again. So I think the same Aaron Rodgers is probably at a similar point where he's good enough to be amongst the best in the game if everything around him is just right, which is, I mean, that's there are lots of quarterbacks that if everything around them is just right, they might give you average. And so I think he's a guy who, if everything around him is just right, he could give you MVP level play. If everything around him is mediocre, he might make y'all good. If everything around him is bad, y'all gonna stink. So I think as they get older, they're much more context dependent. And so I think that's the way I would assess it. And it seems like everything around them right now, the problem is the offensive line. They got the playmakers. They need some answers at tackle. If they can protect him, I think he could ball out. But that's a big if. Tackles are hard to find. Healthy, young, talented tackles are hard to find. That's the another thing about the Bucs Tom Brady experience that gets left out is how healthy they were. When he was balling, they were largely healthy. People start getting hurt. Stuff started looking
right. One last thing. Are the Panthers going to be able to talk themselves into taking Anthony Richardson? Or are they going to talk? Like, I'm very curious to see who they talk themselves into taking. Because Stroud seems like the safest of all of these picks.
Right. Safe ain't the way to go. I mean, I think that's the I don't understand trading for safe. Like, you can get safe later in the draft. I guess Stroud, and I'm not even sure that that's true, honestly, is I guess he's bigger and good enough at quarterback play, but he only showed us that Georgia game to get excited about, like to get really excited about. That's all he showed us, which was a great game against a great defense. So that could be enough. But I'm not so sure that Anthony Richardson isn't a little bit safer.
Oh,
yeah, I'm going hot takes right now. We go hot takes to end the show. The ability to run the ball effectively gives you a high floor. The ability to run the ball beyond exceptionally, that means you good without even throwing it. Like, that's Lamar Jackson territory, and that's potentially Justin Fields territory. So I think the most important thing about developing quarterbacks is having time to develop the quarterbacks. In order to give them time, you need one of two things, or maybe both these things. You need a great team around them or the ability to run. Some way to simplify one special trait that simplifies the game for them and so that they can have the time that it takes to develop, because everyone needs that time to develop. And Anthony Richardson is a great athlete. And if you can build something around him that takes the pressure off him elsewhere, that might be able to buy you the time to develop everything else. The problem is accuracy. Can you teach accuracy? We've seen it happen once.
Yeah. Now, the thing with him is accuracy seems to be a mechanical cleanup. And
yeah,
that can be done. I think I didn't say it would.
Yeah.
I said it can right. be done. The thing that gets me with Richardson is it's a lot harder to teach that keep your eyes up and process the field stuff. I would feel better about my ability to try to get his feet right than the other stuff.
Right.
I also, as I've said this from the very beginning, we ain't even giving that boy a number for year one.
Yep.
Like, damn, only we only got jerseys in small. Damn. I guess we just not going to be able to give you one.
That's part of the problem with I like the – I understand that people want to win in a rookie deal with a quarterback, but
you put a lot of pressure on him. You put him on the clock immediately when you're doing that, because every year that he doesn't play, every down that he doesn't play, you're wasting time. But yeah, I think you're right. The same thing about the fixing his footwork is the same problem with keeping his eyes in the right place. Is all that shit is cute on the practice field, but we all like one of my homeboys from college, a white dude, but like always around black guys, got all the slang, they're all cool, whatever. But when he got mad, oh, them fricks started coming out. All the like, that's the same thing. It's like kind of the true essence when them live bullets start flying. That footwork that you was practicing, I don't know. That eyes downfield business, I don't know. Sometimes you just panic and you become your true self.
Yeah. Like I say, not that he to say, but a year of mechanics cleanup, Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
Became our guy. We will see. But that is Dominique Fosworth. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out on Anscape. Check him out here and there. First Take, Debatable, all over the place. And of course, the Dominique Fosworth Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. My man, I greatly appreciate you.
Appreciate you, man.
All right, now, and ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Parker Owens, Adi Khan, and Dan Stancic handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, hit the voicemail line, 860-516-4119. Tell us about that time somebody in your life called you up to come fix a situation and how you had to resolve it. 860-516-4119. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.